Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
It's called soccer.
It's called football.
Soccer.
Football.
Domino's best deal ever lets you get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99.
Okay, we can agree on that.
Yeah, fully.
So, pineapple? Don't ruin it. Get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99. Finally, something everyone can get behind.
And if the rest disagree, that's between them and Domino's. Which means the only thing left to fight over is who's ordering.
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6:15 to 7:26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings. 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
22 CF 363, State of Wisconsin versus Taylor Shabusiness. State appears by Deputy District Attorney Saunders and District Attorney Lazay. The Shabusiness is here, as is her attorney, Mr. Fairley, on the court's calendar. Really for a Daubert-type hearing this morning to address Dr. O'Donnell, who Mr. Fralick had submitted as a potential expert for the responsibility phase. So, Mr. Fralick.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, the defense does have Dr. Diane Litton, PhD, as an expert to testify in phase two of this trial, the NGI phase. I did confer and consult with Dr. James T. O'Donnell yesterday after court to further talk about his opinions in this matter. I've had a number of discussions with him. I know that he is a pharmacologist who has lots of experience and has testified as an expert in the field of pharmacology in the past. I shared with him some of the concerns that the court had with regards to the 4 points of his trial opinion that was discussed yesterday. The defense had retained him some time ago, and he did testify at a motion hearing, I believe, back in June on legal issues related to the statements and other issues of that sort. After further analysis, after further contemplation and discussion, the defense has decided to not call him in phase two of this proceeding based on the comments that court made and some of the concerns that the court shared. We do not believe that it would be helpful at this point in time, and so we're going to not call him at this phase of the case.
Okay. And I respect that opinion, or that decision rather. Mr. Fralick, I want to indicate that I raised the concerns yesterday because I was very much interested in focusing any testimony at this hearing today on areas where I thought some testimony would need to be directed. I wasn't deciding what was going to happen at this hearing. So I just want to make clear, I didn't render a decision. That's why I'm here this morning to listen to testimony. But I respect your decision to not call him, and that is your decision. And you're right, you have another expert that you're calling, who has already testified in this case as well. So there's no need for a hearing on that this morning. Obviously, the jury isn't going to be in for another 45 minutes, so we can't get going. We have a little bit of extra time. A couple of things. First of all, does the state have anything you want to share on that, Mr. Saunders?
No.
Okay. A couple of things. I was asked by security this morning, Mr. Freilich, about whether your client needed to be in street clothes or whether simply the jail scrubs was fine. Frankly, I think the answer probably is she could have come in jail scrubs because that's the point of the proceeding we're at. On the other hand, I didn't care one way or the other. I'm sure security would have preferred it the other way, but I see that she's here in street clothes. And that's something that you wanted, Mr. Freilich, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so that's been accomplished and we'll do it that way. Then when the jury returns, I think all I would do is give them instruction 603. And I don't know if the parties have that in front of you. If you don't, I'll get you a copy of it. But 603 has a few what I'll call options. The first option is, if the first phase was resolved with the plea of a guilty or no contest, add the following, and then I was to insert the elements. That didn't occur in this case. So the only change I would suggest making to 603 is that the defendant has been found guilty of, and then list the offenses as I've done in these instructions so far, and then indicate, we will now proceed with the second phase of the trial. During the second phase, you will be asked to determine whether the defendant is not responsible by reason of mental disease or defect, and then continue to read that instruction. First of all, I saw when I mentioned about whether or not you had it in front of you, you nodded, Mr. Saunders. You have it in front of you.
No, I don't, but you reviewed it this morning.
Well, let me make, we can just make two copies. I'm assuming you need a copy as well.
I've got it in my binder.
Then I'll make Mr. Saunders a copy.
Thank you, Judge.
So I'll start with you, Mr. Freilich, because you have it. You've probably looked at it as I've been talking. Any objection to my setting out 603 out in that fashion?
Makes sense, Your Honor.
Mr. Saunders?
No objection.
Okay. So that's what I'll do. And then I guess the only other issue is the order of questioning. I know the burden of proof now shifts to the defense. Generally, the party with the burden of proof goes first, although this is kind of one of those cases where the state generally is perceived as going first. Mr. Saunders, preference?
No, I agree. I think the defense has the burden, so they would start opening statement, we would respond, and then they would call witnesses.
Mr. Freilich?
That makes sense as well. I believe, in talking to Mr. Lissay, at the end, at closing, then I would have the rebuttal.
Right.
So
that makes sense. So that's what we'll do. I'm going to keep you under the same time frames I had for openings and closings during the guilt phase of the trial. Okay, anything else to take up? I'll go briefly modify that that jury instruction. Anything else to bring up, Mr. Saunders?
I don't know if the court also wants to read the opening statement instruction 2 after 603. I don't know it's necessary or not, but...
I can. That is not... any objection to that, Mr. Frelick?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. I'll get the opening statement instruction. The proposed jury instruction guide is pretty sparse as to what they suggest we need. So, and frankly, at the end as well, there's 605, but nonetheless, we'll talk about that later. I'll get the opening instruction, the opening statement instruction. I'll read 603 first, then I'll read the opening statement instruction, and we'll go from there. Anything else, Mr. Saunders?
No, thank you.
Mr. Frelick, anything else?
Nothing else, thank you.
Okay, well, the jury will be in at 9:15, so we have a little bit of time, and we'll be back on the record at 9:15. We're in recess. Okay,
thank you.
The jury is present. Is there anything that we need to take up before we have a new jury in?
Briefly, that's okay. Sorry.
So I told counsel it doesn't seem like there's a large issue, but I just wanted to make a record of incidental contact I had with the juror. I was entering the restroom. He was exiting the restroom, and there were reflexive warning comments. I then realized he was a juror. There wasn't any further contact. That was about 8:40 a.m., so I was admittedly a little surprised to see a juror here this early, but I just wanted to make a record of that.
Okay.
Your Honor, Mr. Saunders told me about this. I don't believe it's really an issue at all.
These types of things periodically happen, and usually it's incredibly innocuous. So we give the instruction to the jurors not to talk to the attorneys, and parties not to talk to the jurors. You see somebody, you feel like you're compelled to say hi. In this case, Mr. Saunders seems like wasn't even aware that it was a juror and was not even expecting to see a juror. Sometimes the jury's sitting there and you don't study their faces so you know what you're dealing with. I'm satisfied given what he's represented. There was no intent in what occurred, and the exchange was innocuous and no use to impact the case. But I appreciate you letting me know, Mr. Saunders. Anything else before bringing the jury?
No, thank you.
Mr. Frelick?
No, Your Honor. Thank you so much.
Very good. And then we'll bring the jury. Okay, be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. I hope you had a good evening. This is the second phase of the trial, and I'm going to give you these instructions. The defendant has been found guilty of first-degree intentional homicide, mutilating a corpse, and third-degree sexual assault. We will now proceed with the second phase of this trial. During the second phase, you will be asked to determine whether the defendant is not responsible by reason of mental disease or defect. Before you may find the defendant is not responsible for the criminal conduct, the defendant must satisfy you to a reasonable certainty by the greater weight of the credible evidence that at the time the crime was committed, the defendant had a mental disease or defect, and as a result, lacked substantial capacity either to appreciate the wrongfulness of the conduct or to conform that conduct to the requirements of the law. This issue will be presented to you in the form of two questions. First, at the time the crime was committed, did the defendant have a mental disease or defect? Second, as a result of the mental disease or defect, did the defendant lack substantial capacity either to appreciate the wrongfulness of the conduct or to conform that conduct to the requirements of the law? You will be asked to answer the second question only if you answer the first question, yes. If you find the defendant is not responsible for the criminal conduct, the defendant will be committed to the custody of the Department of Health and Department of Health Services and will be placed in an appropriate institution unless the court determines that the defendant would not pose a danger to herself or to others if released under conditions ordered by the court. The only issue at this second phase of the trial is the defendant's mental condition at the time of the offense. The lawyers will now make opening statements. The purpose of an opening statement is to give the lawyers an opportunity to tell you what they expect the evidence will show so that you will better understand the evidence as it is introduced during the trial. I must caution you, however, that the opening statements are not evidence. And ladies and gentlemen, because this phase of the trial, the burden of proof shifts to the defense, the order of questioning and presentation will change, and Mr. Fralick will go first. Mr. Fralick, are you prepared to make your opening statement?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Very good. Go ahead.
Thank you. Your Honor, may it please the court, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, good morning. Mr. Lissay, Mr. Saunders, prosecutors for the state of Wisconsin. You're going to hear some testimony in this case from the defense expert, Dr. Diane Litton. She's from the Menasha area. She's a PhD. She's a forensic psychologist. You're going to hear testimony from the state doctors as well, Dr. Matthew Seipel and Dr. Christina Engin. The burden does shift to the defense in this particular case. We're in phase two now, and the burden shifts to the defense to me to ask you to consider whether the defendant, Taylor Denise Shabizis, is responsible or is not responsible by reason of mental disease or defect. And Wisconsin law, under Wisconsin statutes 971.15, does require the defense to satisfy you jurors to a reasonable certainty by the greater weight of the credible evidence that at the time the crimes were committed, which was February 22nd of 2022, that Taylor Shabizis had a mental disease or had a mental defect, and that as a result she lacked the substantial capacity either to appreciate the wrongfulness of her conduct or to conform her conduct to the requirements of the law. So that's packed with a lot of information that you're going to have to consider. I did tell you yesterday that you're kind of like analysts. You're going to have to listen to the testimony, listen to the facts, assess the credibility of witnesses, assess the information that you're receiving, and then you'll have to make some decisions and considerations on these important legal issues. The defense did retain Dr. Diane Litton. She interviewed Taylor Shabizis. We believe that the evidence will show that she did a thorough evaluation of Ms. Shabizis' mental status, that you will hear about Dr. Litton's extensive experience in the field of psychology. When you have experts, you kind of heard from other experts, and they have a resume or a CV. In the field, we say CV, curriculum vitae. It's a list of their experience and training and education. And you're going to hear that Dr. Litton has been a psychologist since 1993. That she has extensive experience, that she has approximately 3,000 hours of post-doctoral training, that she conducted hundreds of forensic evaluations and GI competency evaluations, things of that sort. You will hear testimony that she worked at Mendota Mental Health Institution here in Wisconsin, that she looked at many different evaluations performed on Taylor Shabizis, including from Dr. Tracy Lucetta, Dr. Matthew Seipel, Dr. Christina Engin, Dr. Deborah Collins. And you will hear that Dr. Litton, we believe she'll testify that she looked at a whole myriad of records, including jail records, Bell and Health mental health records, a court order, an order for civil commitment, mental health order, an order to take psychotropic medications, basically a medication order. She will, I believe, testify that she reviewed Nicolet Psychiatric Center mental health records from Brown County. She will talk and testify about her contacts with Ms. Chibizis on the different occasions that she met with her, one being a situation where a chair was thrown by my client at her before I got involved in the case. She will testify that she did have a another interview with her at the jail, and she asked me to sit in. So you're going to hear about all of her findings, her observations, and her opinions in this particular case. We believe that she has extensive experience. She's been in this field for a very long time, and that you need to pay close attention to what she says and give her opinions strong consideration. Give it due weight. And we believe that her testimony will be that she's of the opinion that Taylor Chibizis does qualify for the NGI plea based on her diagnosis of a serious mental disorder. And that she has some other opinions, and she'll tell you about those when she testifies. You will hear, I believe, testimony from my client's father, Arturo Coronado. And I believe that he will come here. He's been summoned by the defense, by subpoena, to answer some questions about his daughter growing up, how she was, what kind of issues or problems did she have, what kind of mental health issues, and what he did to try and help her get treatment. You will hear from Dr. Litton about my client's mother, that she lost her mother at a young age, and that was a pivotal event in her life. Dr. Litton will also provide some testimony about the fact that she believes there may have been a budding personality disorder, and that she saw a really disturbed teen when she assessed all of the school records. She looked at all the school records and did a table or a chart. She looked at the mental health history. She did a one-page chart on that. You know, the burden of proof in this case does rest with the defense on the NGI issue. I think that the testimony from all of these different professionals, these different doctors, these psychologists who talk about behavior and things of that sort, you can hear their testimony about all of the different problems, all of the different mental health issues, all of the different behavioral issues that Taylor Chibizis had growing up as a kid, as a youth. She had a lot of obstacles that she had to face growing up. We believe Dr. Litton will also provide some testimony about my client's prior treatment with antipsychotic medications. She will testify about my client going off these antipsychotic medications sometime after her inpatient treatment in 2021. And Dr. Litton will set up and provide the background history and information on Taylor Chibizis' life and upbringing. So the defense does have the burden of proof on this issue of whether our client is responsible for these crimes. But we believe that the testimony and the evidence will show that at the time of the offense that she did have a mental disease or defect. We believe that the information and the testimony will show and hopefully lead to you to conclude that she lacked the substantial capacity to appreciate the wrongfulness of her conduct or to conform her conduct to the requirements of the law. And what I ask is that you just sit back, carefully listen to what these experts have to say, and then render a fair and just result. Thank you.
Mr. Saunders, are you prepared to make an opening statement?
I am.
Go ahead.
Good morning. So, when I said in opening on Monday that this case is about choices and responsibility, this is what we're referring to, right? The responsibility phase is what we're here for now. Essentially, you're being asked, you know, what was the defendant's mental state at the time of the offenses for which she's convicted and whether she should be responsible for that. Let's address the obvious. What Ms. Chavisnes did to Shad is disturbing. It's conduct we don't see often. It's conduct that you may hear about and think, my gosh, that person must not have been in their right mind when that happened. I'm not going to sit here and try to convince you otherwise. But you've already carefully listened to the evidence and followed the law that the judge gave you. And you'll do so going forward as well. Because you will be told what a mental disease or defect is and what it is not. A mental disease is not antisocial conduct. It's not conduct brought about by use of a controlled substance, a temporary mental state caused by a controlled substance. A person is not mentally ill just because they commit something that's unnatural, that's so enormous, that just is beyond comprehension, right? You'll be instructed that those are not mental diseases or defects. So as disturbing as the conduct you already heard about is, and may be, that's not where the analysis ends. You'll hear from several experts. Defense already went over Dr. Litton and her qualifications and how she supports Ms. Chavisnes' NGI plea. But you'll also hear some issues with Dr. Litton's methodology, her analysis, and ultimately her conclusions. The state will call several psychologists of its own, both of whom were actually court-appointed, not by either party, by the court, when they did their analysis and meetings with Ms. Chavisnes. Dr. Matthew Seipel will talk about some of the issues that he had with Dr. Litton's methodology and her conclusions. He'll testify about those. You'll also hear from the court-appointed expert, Dr. Christina Engen. Again, came here on a court order, not retained by either side. And she'll tell you that she does not believe Ms. Chavisnes is suffering from a mental disease or defect, or that she was unable or lacked substantial capacity to conform her conduct to the requirements of law or appreciate the wrongfulness of her conduct. Okay? So you'll hear from a variety of witnesses, some of whom are experts, some of whom are lay witnesses or, you know, civilians. You'll hear about, and you've already heard about, confounding all of this is the defendant's drug use immediately before the offense. We've all heard about that, defendants admitting that and acknowledging that. You'll hear about how methamphetamine has those effects, has effects of psychosis, that has that result in people. And again, it's not a mental disease or defect if you're using controlled substances and it causes that result. So you'll hear from these experts and witnesses, but ultimately, in our state, whether somebody is suffering from a mental disease or defect is a jury determination. It's up to you, based on the facts and opinions that you hear. Certainly, the opinions of the experts will be valuable for you. But you've already heard all the evidence. You know more about this case than any of these experts likely do. You heard testimony about Ms. Chavisnes' mental state both before and after, in close proximity to the offenses that she's convicted of. You've heard her friends, her roommate, officers who had contact with her, Mr. Hendricks, Ms. Packinich, describe their interactions in close proximity to this offense and reported nothing out of the ordinary, some of whom are her friends who've known her for quite a while. Mr. Gannon, Mr. Tomes, you've already heard about their observations of the defendant. But more importantly, You saw the defendant's own words.
Hours after all of these offenses occurred, really close proximity, you saw her be able to recall, be able to talk about it, and more importantly, you saw her mannerisms, how she was talking about it. Did not appear anyone was suffering under some manic episode. She's calmly talking about it with officers, providing information that is consistent with everything they're seeing. What does that indicate? She's aware of what's going on. She remembers everything. This isn't somebody who is not appreciating what happened. So that's why we call all these experts, but ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a jury determination. It's a factual issue for you. And the state believes that when you hear all that evidence and consider the evidence you heard in the first phase, that you'll find the defendant has failed to meet her burden, that she should be held responsible for the conduct that she's convicted of and what she did to Shad. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Freilich, are you prepared to call your first witness?
I need to confer with the lieutenant. Oh, yes. My witness is on his way up, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
They'll give you those right there. They want their notepads back. Thank you.
Frelick.
This is
Arturo Coronado.
Okay. Sir, if you could just, if you could stay standing and turn and face her, and as best you can, raise your right hand.
You solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in the matter, now before the court, so help you God.
I do.
Please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Arturo Coronado.
Okay, Mr. Frelick, the witness is yours.
Thank you. Mr. Coronado, good morning.
Good morning.
Sir, how old are you?
51.
What is your date of birth?
5/24/72.
Are you currently married, sir?
I am not.
Okay. You are living in Green Bay, correct?
Yeah, you know that, Chris.
Okay. And your daughter is Taylor Denise Shabusiness, is that fair?
She is.
Who is her mother?
Marla.
Okay. And you were married to Marla for a while, sir?
Of course.
How many years was it?
We were together, we were married about 10, together about 15, 16.
Did you live together in Wisconsin or some other
Illinois.
State? Illinois.
Illinois and Wisconsin.
Okay. And where was your daughter, Taylor Shabusiness, born?
In Evanston, Illinois.
Okay. Does Taylor have a sister or brother?
She has a brother that passed away last year.
Okay. What was his name?
AJ, Arturo Drep.
Okay.
J-R-E-P.
And why did he pass away? What happened?
July 1st, last year. Motorcycle accident.
Okay. When you were living in Illinois with your daughter, Taylor Shabusiness, was she ever brought to a hospital at all?
No.
Okay. Did she ever receive any mental health treatment when you lived in Illinois?
No.
Okay. Did something happen to Taylor's mother at some point?
She passed away.
Okay.
She passed away May 20th, 2009, in her sleep.
Okay. Did that take a toll on your daughter, Taylor?
Well, of course.
Okay. Can you tell me a little
bit,
sir? It
took a toll on my son as well and me.
Okay. Right. It took a toll on everybody, correct?
But yeah.
Okay. And when her mother passed away in May of 2009, how old was Taylor?
11, probably 11 and a half.
Okay.
My son and daughter were, about 9 and a half, 11 and a half years old.
Okay. Did Taylor go to school that day that her mother passed away?
I tried to get him to go to school, but they knew something was going on.
Okay.
And they came back.
Can you describe a little bit how the death of Taylor's mother took a toll on her or impacted her? Can you give me a little bit of commentary on that?
Well, they were pretty young. I mean, obviously, you know, her mom's not around anymore. And, you know, Marla was ill. So just, I guess, they kind of knew what was going on. But it was unexpected. We watched the movie the night before and fell asleep, and I woke up, and my wife was already cold, already passed.
You found her?
She's laying next to me.
Okay. And what about the kids? What about Taylor? Did she see her mom in that state?
They did not see. No, I did not allow that.
Okay. But were the kids in the house?
They were upstairs in their bedrooms.
Okay. After that occurred, did you see any changes in Taylor's behavior, first of all?
She is a little rambunctious. Nothing. I mean, she played volleyball. She had a good amount of friends she hung out with. She was a normal kid.
Okay. Did things change at all for her?
I wouldn't say too much. She got in trouble a little bit at school, but I don't know, something with a band instrument.
What happened with that?
Oh, she just took somebody's band instrument
and
then returned it, but nothing major.
Okay. When did you come to Green Bay? What year? Do you know?
2000. I started working here in 2007.
2007? Where did you work at?
I worked for Verizon.
Okay.
Before it was GTE, then turned into Verizon.
Okay.
18 years.
right? And when you came to Green Bay, did Taylor go to school here then?
Of course.
Of course. Where did she go to school?
She went through the Howard Somical School District.
And did she go to Bayport High School as well?
Yes, sir.
Did you get information that she was having issues at school?
Well, yeah.
What can you tell me?
From what I can recall, just normal. Just kind of acting out, I guess. Just there's a couple of little instances that happened in high school, but it's kind of why I yanked her out of there and sent her to Texas so she can graduate and kind of get away from the issues that were going on here.
She went to Texas to live with her grandparents?
Correct.
When was that, do you know?
I believe. I'm not sure.
Okay. How old was she in 2017? Do you know?
She was 16 and a half, probably 17.
16, 17. How long did she live with her grandparents then in Texas?
About a little over a year until she graduated. Maybe 2 years. About a year, maybe a year and a half.
Was that Cotulla, Texas?
That's correct.
Was there a point where she got pregnant?
Well, about a year and a half ago, maybe.
Okay. And she had a baby, correct?
Yes, she did.
And the baby is currently living in Texas with the grandparents, correct?
Yeah. How is that relevant to anything here? Why do we need to talk about him?
Let me ask you this. So, before the baby was born, was she placed at Nicolet Psychiatric Center?
Before the baby was born?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Okay. Did you see her at the Nicolet Psychiatric Center?
Oh, when she was there? Yeah. I'm sorry. It's just so much going on.
It's through Brown County.
Yeah. I went to take her there myself, actually.
Okay. Why did you take her there?
She just wasn't in the right state of mind.
Was she suicidal?
Probably.
Was she psychotic?
Objection. I don't think this witness has the ability to answer that question.
Rephrase the question.
Okay. Right. Was she experiencing like hallucinations?
She was not in the right state of mind at all. So I feared that she would hurt herself. So that's why I took her. We both agreed. We both went there together.
Okay.
And tried to get help. And then ended up releasing her, and she came home, and that was about it.
Okay. Was she prescribed some medications and things like that?
She was at that evening, no. But, yeah, she has been on some medications that she'd never liked taking those pills. I mean, they kind of messed her up even worse.
Did they cause her to hallucinate or cause her to have...
I think it all started with a Seroquel that was taken, back, I don't understand too much about those prescription drugs, but they never agreed with her at all.
Okay. And do you know the other medications that she was asked to take?
ADHD, Adderall, I believe.
Anything about Haldol?
I don't know.
Okay.
But I know she was prescribed some stuff, but I don't know the names.
Okay. Did you talk to some of the doctors or psychiatrists at the Nicolet Psychiatric Facility?
Judge, I'm going to object. I think this witness can offer his observations and the facts that he's aware of from what he observed of Ms. Shabusiness with respect to what he learned from doctors about her mental health conditions. We have professionals who are going to answer questions based on the records. Those people are better equipped to answer those questions. The information he received from doctors is hearsay.
It's not hearsay. I didn't ask what they said. I just asked if you talked to the doctors, Your Honor.
Sure. So the question that's pending isn't asking for hearsay. I think the objection was made because it sounds like that's where we're headed. So he can answer the question that was just asked, and then I'll just indicate, Mr. Fralick, that objection is probably coming if you go the next step. But the question that's pending can be answered. So I think the question was, did you talk to anybody at Nicolet?
I did.
Ask another question.
Okay. Did Taylor live with you in Green Bay
for a while?
For a little bit, yeah.
Was that in 2021 or what year was it?
I believe so, yeah. But again, speaking to them and, you know, her being an adult, they really, even being a father, weren't allowed to disclose anything.
Right.
You know.
Sure. When she lived with you, sir, what address did she live with you at?
1130 Moraine Way.
And how long did she live with you?
Just a few months.
Did it ever come to a point where you didn't want her to stay there anymore because her behaviors were getting worse or her mental status was getting worse?
No. I love my daughter, so I'll do whatever it takes to help her out.
Did you ever review any of her records at all?
Objection. I don't think he can testify to the content. Again, I think it's the same objection. He can answer whether he reviewed them. He can't answer anything about the content of the records.
Your Honor, the state, what they're trying to do is they're trying to anticipate an objection. They know this one is not an objectionable one, in my opinion. And any good parent, when you go to the doctor, you're going to talk with the physician or the psychologist or whoever it is about the status of your child. So I'm just asking that.
It's not like I didn't try. I tried talking.
Hold it. Wait. So I'm going to overrule the objection at this point, and the question can be asked. Mr. Freilich, why don't you ask it again so the witness has it in his mind?
Okay, Your Honor. I kind of forgot, so hopefully the...
Did you review some of the records of your daughter? Did you review any of the records?
Like at the facility?
Yes.
Again, she was an adult at the time, and I can't. You know,
the answer was no.
Okay. When she was living at your house, sir, on Moraine Way, was she ever experiencing any hallucinations or anything like that?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Just know that she wasn't in the right frame of mind. You know, she's going to kind of see things. She'd like to walk around and, you know, we take a walk, cemetery. Just right down the street, but she just needed, you know, just to kind of get out and walk around and, I guess, ease her mind.
Did you have concerns about her from a physical or mental standpoint?
Always.
Okay.
Always.
All right. Thank you. Nothing further. I appreciate that.
Do you have any cross-examination?
Just briefly. Mr. Coronado, were you aware of whether or not your daughter was employed during the time that she was residing with you on Moraine Way?
She was not at the time, at that, no.
Do you know anything about her employment history as an adult?
Sure.
And had she held jobs in the past?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know where she worked?
She worked for Saputo. She worked a couple years, Saputo, 3.5 years probably.
And is that relatively recently? Prior to her arrest, of course.
Right. Prior to.
Yeah, and
she was doing really well there, too, until her boyfriend slash husband got out of jail. That turned everything upside down.
Okay. In part because of the methamphetamine use, right?
Yep.
So Taylor was doing pretty well, and then she started using the drugs.
Yeah.
No further questions.
Pretty bad drug, too.
Anything on that, Mr. Freilich?
What was the drug?
No, meth, heroin, whatever else. I don't know.
Marijuana?
Yeah, I don't know. The kid was already doing that shit before, and just a fucking loser, and he got my daughter involved in that shit.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Nothing else.
Anything on that?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. You can step down. Next witness, Mr. Freilich.
I call Dr. Diane Litton, PhD, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Okay, doctor, if you want to just step right up over here. Right up over here.
Diane Litton.
Okay, Mr. Frelick, then the witness is yours.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Morning.
State your name for the record again.
Diane Litton.
Can you spell that?
L-Y-T-T-O-N.
And what is your occupation?
I'm an independent forensic psychologist.
Where is your office?
In Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And are you a PhD?
I am.
Does that make you a licensed psychologist?
Well, I earned the PhD first and then became a licensed psychologist.
Okay. Could you briefly provide me with your educational background?
Sure. I have a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, and a PhD doctoral degree. In all three are in the field of psychology.
How long have you been a licensed psychologist?
June 1993.
And did you work for UW-Madison?
I was during my PhD program at UW-Madison, during the graduate program, I was what's called a research assistant for the professors, for my professor. So that was my work while I was getting my PhD.
Okay. Initially, when you got your PhD, where did you work?
I worked for the University of Wisconsin, initially in an administrative internship through University of Wisconsin system. I did that for a year, and then I became a research scientist at UW-Madison.
Did you work at Mendota Mental Health Institute?
I did.
Could you tell me a little bit about that?
After taking off about 5 years for family matters, I then retrained to become a clinical licensed psychologist, and that took me 3,000 hours at Mendota Mental Health Institute in Madison. And then they hired me as a staff psychologist. And I was at Mendota for about 7 years, 1991 until 1997, when I became independent forensic psychologist. And I was a therapist, too, for some years, too.
Okay. As a psychologist, do you conduct NGI evaluations, competency evaluations, psychological evaluations?
Yes.
Okay. What kind of patients did you treat as a forensic psychologist?
A variety. The ones inpatient at Mendota Mental Health Institute, Madison, we used to have what's called the adult and, well, teenage and child, not forensic units, but child units. For a while, I was on a juvenile adolescent unit, and then I worked for a couple years on what's called the civil unit, adults. They're no longer at Mendota now. But then the last part of that 7 years, I was in the forensic units, people who were committed under the insanity, NGI. And then also, so most of the patients I dealt with were had been found not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect, and the other patients were there for competency to proceed to trial evaluation. So I had both.
Did you also deal with guardianships?
Peripherally when I worked at Mendota, but since being privately employed, I do numerous guardianship evaluations for Outagamie County.
Okay. Had you also been involved in doing sex offender evaluations as well?
Yes.
Now, you have a curriculum vitae, correct?
Yeah, very small one. Yeah, resume.
You're listening to True Crime Today in the Hidden Killers podcast, continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.